Good afternoon, Ms. Singh.
Good afternoon.
My name is Constance Ncube Ndaba. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. I'm co-chairing this session with the chairperson for Health and Social Services in the NCOP, Ms. Gillion. If you look at your laptop, look at the screen,
yes.
You can see Ms. Gillion there.
Oh, I see, yes. Hi.
Yeah. Another member who's on visual platform is Ms. Honorable Malika from Mpumalanga. Malika, your video is off. There she is. Yeah. And then I will allow Honorable members to introduce themselves. Honorable Malika.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon, Ms. Singh. I am Joyce Buitumelo Maluleke, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, Ms. Singh. Teliso Mgweba, the member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. And Gusibongile Khawula, a member of the committee. And good morning, good afternoon. What's the time now?
Yeah, afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ms. Singh. Welcome here. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Ms. Singh. My name is Alec Nchabele. I'm sitting in this subcommittee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Ms. Singh. My name is Mbule Lopaga, and I'm a member of this committee. Thank you so much.
Afternoon, Chairperson. Good day, Ms. Singh. My name is Sikile Masiko. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ms. Singh. My name is Leo Lompiti, and I'm also a member of this committee.
I heard member of the committee. Sorry, I didn't hear
my, my apologies. My name is Louis Olompiti, and I'm also a member of the committee. Thank you.
Honorable Malika? Honorable Malika?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Ms. Singh. My name is Audrey Malika, a member of the subcommittee.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, honorable members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Sitting next to Honorable MC is Dr. Tembe, our legal person from Parliament. The two ladies just here, Rebecca, Bula Shiva, the committee, and the one sitting there now, Nelson Obatana, our committee secretary for the Portfolio Committee on Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. The one who's busy with the logistics is Ms. Zuzi France, the coordinator for the select committee at the NCOP. And then you have 5 minutes with us. Bottle of water there. You feel that now you are becoming otherwise. You just make the chair aware and you drink your water.
Thank you.
I don't want to see collapsing in that chair. And then you have with us. So sometimes we delay because of the follow-up questions. Question. I said everything was to say for that. Okay. The first question is about yourself. Tell us about yourself and why you think you're a suitable candidate to be recommended to serve in the board for NYDA.
Sure. Thank you, honorable members, for giving me this opportunity. My name is
Nina Singh. I'm born and bred from Durban, KwaZulu-Natal. I spent my formative years in Durban, and when I was 14, I moved to New Delhi in India, where I attended high school. I graduated from the American Embassy School in New Delhi with my certificates in the International Baccalaureate Program. Thereafter, I studied at New York University in New York. I spent my first year abroad in London as part of their study abroad program. In my third year, I was employed by New York University as a resident assistant, wherein I was responsible for the wellness, security, and academic needs for the students who lived in the residence halls. I was re-employed for second term, so my third and fourth years at NYU, I was a resident assistant or RA. Thereafter, I was employed by a legal recruiting firm called EP Dine Incorporated, based in New York City. They recruited professional and registered attorneys in the New York area for law firms and Fortune 500 companies. During my time there, I was involved in some training and development and assisting them in developing a training plan for their resident assistants. Thereafter, in July 2016, I returned back to South Africa. I was unemployed for a while. I began volunteering with the Lalita Development Foundation. It's a nonprofit organization based in Durban and focuses on development, community development needs, and education. I also work part-time for an expanded public works program based in Mamdoni Municipality in KZN, where I was a recruitment consultant, and then I was a human resources advisor assisting with their payroll, occupational health and safety measures, Department of Labor matters, etc. Thereafter, through the EPWP project, I was then introduced to an organization called Women in Planning South Africa, which is also a nonprofit organization, and I assisted them with their social media marketing on a voluntary basis. They are a organization concerned with gender mainstreaming in the built environment and planning sector. After that, I was also part-time. I then became involved in the real estate industry as a property consultant in Dakota. I felt that it was important for me as a woman of color to understand the matters pertaining to real estate and land within South Africa. So I entered the industry and I completed my further education and training certificate in real estate. Thereafter, I became involved with census training, where I'm now currently the education training and development practitioner and managing. I started as the training coordinator, and I soon became solely responsible for most of the matters pertaining to the training organization. I began upskilling myself with regards to ETD programs, such as the Assessment Facilitator Skills Program, as well as project management. And I now sit before you today as a education training and training quality assurance consultant, and ETD practitioner concerned with training and skills development, as well as online learning within South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Malik, for that. My question to Ms. is as follows. If we look into the country, we are faced with a pandemic called COVID-19, but we are faced with another pandemic called gender-based violence and femicide. Ms. Singh, if you will be a successful candidate to serve on the NYDA board, can you tell us what you will do to assist in curbing gender-based violence and femicide, especially under young people? Young women face this challenge every day. They are killed. Not only young women, but also young children, girl child, boy child. And I think this is one of the issues that has become a pandemic throughout the country. What do you think NYDA can do to assist us to curb this pandemic? Thank you.
Thank you so much for the question, Honourable Member. I think the fundamental, you know, in terms of what needs to change and what we can do as a community, as a nation, is focus on education. With regards to the NYDA strategic plan, it does touch on things like misogyny, patriarchy, toxicity, etc. And I think on a most basic level, introducing discussions in curriculums in schools from primary school level is necessary in order to introduce youth to concepts of toxic masculinity, the patriarchy, what it means for what true gender equality means. As a young woman, you know, you did mention, on a daily basis we deal with gender-based microaggressions, whether in the workplace or on the street, whether it has to do with catcalling, harassment, or other matters that we experience in the boardroom and elsewhere. So I think fundamentally, and what has proven to be, I believe there was a report by the UN, that education was the one key element that proved to be the most effective in terms of curbing gender-based violence. I don't think it's something that can be solved in a day, but I think that through systematic and structural change to curriculums, we can begin to expose youth to the idea of what gender equality means and why it's important to address gender-based violence. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Malika.
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Singh, can you describe for us your understanding of the Presidential Youth Employment Intervention? And also, can you indicate to us goals that the National Development Plan 2030
set out
for the youth? Thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry, I just want to just make sure that I understand the question. It's regarding the Presidential Youth Employment Initiatives and the National Youth Policy, am I correct?
Malika.
No, it's National NDP, National Development Plan 2030, set out for the youth. Maybe can you indicate us the goals that the NDP set out for the youth?
Thank you. Yes, I think when it comes to development, the one thing that is plaguing South Africa right now has to deal with unemployment. And I think when we look at just in terms of population statistics, youth issues are South African issues and vice versa, just from a perspective of the youth being the majority cohort in our looking at issues like pertaining to development, and we're looking at unemployment as one of the main challenges that we're facing as a nation, we need to understand that that goes hand in hand with concepts like education, looking at the intersectionalities of the different issues that youth face. So I think more than ever, COVID-19 has really shown the effects or the cascading effect of certain issues. So when it comes to mental health, public health, unemployment, housing, education, skills development, showing the interconnectedness between all of these issues. So with regards to the presidential youth employment interventions, I believe that when it comes to these interventions, it really boils down to implementation. So like I said, when it comes to the plans and strategic plans and the goals and objectives, I think there is a thorough understanding of what needs to be done. When it comes to implementation, I think that's where we need to really hold on, you know, concentrate on what measures are we going to take to ensure that the objectives are being met. So with regards to the employment intervention, I think it is much needed, especially, you know, I did mention that for a brief while I was unemployed when I came back to South Africa. And I remember I sent out approximately 5 job applications. I received 8 responses, and it only resulted in 1 actual interview, wherein they responded that I was actually overqualified for the position, so I didn't end up getting it. But what I noticed was, in terms of the opportunities that are there, but also this notion of needing experience to have a position, but the needing of, you know, you need that position to get the experience. So it's a never-ending cycle. And I think with initiatives like the YS Youth Employment Services, it aims to address those concerns. And I think it is much needed. But with the implementation, we need to inculcate a culture of employers and organizations willing to mentor and guide youth for the purpose of mentoring and guiding you. So it's great that you are getting things like BE points and you are getting a labor force to assist you and your organization. But fundamentally, we need to focus on the notion of mentoring and holistic mentoring of youth to ensure that employment that comes after the mentoring is meaningful to the youth. I believe today is actually National Intern Day, I heard on the radio, and radio of their first experiences as interns, and the one DJ mentioned how she was a intern at Drum, and she thoroughly enjoyed her time there, but it was unpaid, and even though she enjoyed it, given her background and her circumstances, it was not feasible for her to continue in that position. So those are the challenges I think that we need to tackle when we're looking at the policies surrounding youth employment and the initiatives and how we intend to implement them, especially as board members that shall oversee some of these programs and initiatives, looking at the practicalities surrounding that and bringing our own experiences as youth, whether unemployed or employed, having been interns and mentors, and bringing those perspectives so that we can further that agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Being a little Westbill MS Sink. Like South Africa, imsebenzi iyangunqipha, but youth iningi enye size sibone singena ekwizidakamizwa nasokuphuzweni kakhulu. Lana kune youth ehambile yaya kofundela amekhenikhi nento ey'ningi nje hambe yayifundela nakuma-college. Kodwa ekugcineni uma sefanele iqasheka ayiqasheki, mhlambe engifanekise njengawusuku eDurban. Uma uthi lapha yangase-Western Phoenix, kunendawo endala lapha eseceleni komgwaqo lana okune-youth khona abakhanda imoto. Ngamaminyaka siyababonga labaya ngoba kunoma bantshontshe bayakwazi. Laba abaney'tifiketi bayakwazi ukugcina ukuthi le youth ekhona endaweni igcina isikwazi ukuthi inayo izongena ifunde kubona. Phansi kabesta nakhona futhi. And uma uhamba uza la eGoli nakho uzobathola abantu, uhambe eMpumalanga noma amaprovinsi onke bakhona leyo youth. Bese kuba khona laba omama nayo futhi youth abadayisa emgwaqweni, abadayisa mhlawumbe amaveji kanjalo njalo ne usebenza yena. Yini ongayenza ukuthi labo bantu already sebekhombisile ukuthi noma imisebenzi ingekho ungandisi ubugebengu, kodwa nakho esikwenzayo. Uma ngabe wena uyalithola leli thuba lokuthi uyangena kule bhodi, yini ozoyenza ukuthi bagcine nabo bey'bona sebeney'nkampani ey'nkulu, mhlambe iy'moto zako-government sey'khandwa kubona, laba ngithi bayadayisa amaveji kanjalo, bagcine nabo sebenenda wizokulima batholele umhlaba abalime nabo babe namahu babe namahulseli bakwazi nabo bagcine beqashe abanye abantu ngiyabonga.
I must apologize for my lack of proficiency.
No,
in...
we'll call it.
Okay.
In South Africa, we realize that a lot of youth boom, when we look at this issue of employment, we see that it's falling out slimly so. And then also, most of our youth, they are getting into drugs, and that is affecting them negatively. Also, we realize that there are those who have studied mechanics and all that. And then we find some of them fixing vehicles besides the road and all that. Yes, we are grateful for those. But also, there are those who are young mothers. We find them, they are still young, they are youth, and then they are street vendors. They sell clothes, vegetables, and etc. And then what is it that you think can be done in order to try and assist those young mothers in order for them to obtain maybe a piece of land where they will be able to do their farming in vegetables? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. I think, you know, a couple of points were raised in that question in terms of, so the first, I think, with regards to substance abuse and public health, as I mentioned before, a lot of these issues are interconnected. So with regards to public health, you find that with substance abuse, there's a wide range, you know, from family history to environmental factors, etc. But with others, we're looking at the substance abuse as a result of unemployment, lack of skills, being in an environment where drug use and abuse is not necessarily promoted, but it's within the environment. I think that by promoting skills and education and increasing our rates of employment, we will find that substance abuse reliance and alcohol reliance will decrease as a matter of fact. And I think that's because of the relationship between not being engaged, with youth not being engaged, whether through employment, opportunities, volunteer work, training, the need to be stimulated. So I think that's that connection. If we, once we see the rise in employment and initiatives regarding education, more of those programs, I think that we will see a trend. Not immediately, but I think over time. Next, with regards to the informal traders and those outside of the formalized economy, I think with regards to, you know, the main goal is for self-sufficiency, is for you to be self-sufficient. To not be difficult with regards to all of us coming from different backgrounds and what we bring with us when we reach 18 years of age. But with regards to the informal economy and informal traders, there is such a value in terms of the mentoring that could occur with young women, young men who have set up their own businesses and are looking at the, and are running it successfully in terms of their finances, setting up their stalls, setting up their shops, etc. So partnering that with, I think, unemployed youth, you know, focusing on all aspects of our economy, all types of businesses in terms of providing opportunities for youth to gain that experience with regards to entrepreneurship is necessary. Also looking at holistic mentorship and guiding, I was lucky enough to mentor four students from Durban University of Technology, and two of them were women. Both of them had children who were not living with them at the time because they were still quite young. They were toddlers. But these two young women were still at university. They're still, you know, coming to their internship every day on time. And it's only when you really get to speak to people do you understand what they're coming from and what the situation is. And again, skills was, and I'm, you know, it's because maybe I'm in the education industry, that once you impart that kind of guidance onto people. So when we're talking about mentoring, it should not necessarily only be academic. It shouldn't just be, you know, how to be prepared for the work. It should be holistic. It is, who are you as a person? How do we ensure that you have, that the right to human dignity is being upheld when it comes to how we're going to develop you as a person? And that really needs to be looked at and examined from all levels of the hierarchy in employment, of all organizations, private and public. So when it comes to speaking to these young women, again, opening up that discussion and having those conversations regarding opportunities and then building the bridges between informal traders and those who need work experience and the private informal economy, I think, is necessary in order to fill that gap. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My question, I think, is kind of going to give us a guide in terms of how we do it, ensuring that everybody has provided what is required by the young people or something. How are we going to ensure that the NYMDA under your leadership as a board member will consistently apply everybody
I think it boils down to good corporate governance and how we function as a board. The objectives of the board would be to be cohesive, to collaborate, to be in discussion, regardless of, you know, which subcommittee you belong in, having that constant communication with each other, and to be progressive. So we shouldn't just be placeholders. We're there to contribute. And I think the principles of good corporate governance, of transparency, openness, good ethics, authenticity, those principles need to be upheld. I think that's upheld when you engage with your colleagues in such a manner as to discuss what is it that we need to do? What is it that we need to do to ensure that the principles of legislation and of the beliefs that have been imposed on us by being appointed to this board, what do we do to ensure that those are being upheld and that sight of the purpose of why we're on the board and the purpose of a youth development agency, you know, focusing on youth development, youth needs, and, you know, going back to the issues of employment, skills development, training, entrepreneurship, sustainability, thinking about when we're discussing our programs and the implementation of such, are we monitoring and evaluating these programs? Are we taking a project management approach to each project and initiative that we're taking on? And how are we building and contributing together as a board and working as a cohesive unit as opposed to having different agendas, making sure we're all on the same page? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Ms. Singh, if you can be appointed as NYDA board, how can you help an institution like the NYDA to support young people, especially who inspire to be entrepreneurs, to digitalize their operations, especially in our townships, which is the peri-urban, and also in villages, equipping them with the required skills and be ready for the fourth industrial revolution?
Thank you for the question. I think when it comes to the fourth industrial revolution, we need to understand that, and we already do, it's in the plans, you know, strategic plans and annual plans, the idea of the discrepancy between what we want to achieve with 4IR and what we currently have in terms of infrastructure and resources and providing that to peri-urban and rural areas. And, you know, the great thing about South Africa right now is that we have the ability to progress and grow. And we have so many opportunities to do so. With regards to e-commerce and digitizing, so I'm currently, you know, with COVID-19, we've seen a rise in a lot of training service providers wanting to develop their training online. So I've been assisting and I've been a consultant to a few of these training service providers. And exactly what you're asking is the issue that we're being challenged with is how do we engage learners in rural areas and peri-urban areas without the necessary data infrastructure or even something as simple as having a working laptop and is able to download materials. How do we engage them in meaningful education so that the purpose and the point and objectives of this learning program are still being met? So, Gus, it is in education, but it also is in some ways information technology with regards to developing in a sustainable way with regards to education specifically. But when we're talking about organization and businesses and entrepreneurs in peri-urban and township and rural areas, we need to look at the models of other countries. You know, the Mara phone came to Dubai Tradeport. It's in South Africa. We have a African-made cell phone that poses so many possibilities in terms of how we can use this device to implement concepts such as e-commerce, ensuring that we can develop skills with regards to smartphones, because the reality is that a lot of learners and a lot of youth may not necessarily have access to laptops and computers, but they are more likely to have access to a smartphone, a tablet, regardless of what the software is. So with that in mind, we need to work with the realities of what we have and work towards that with regards to the fourth industrial revolution. Using the resources such as a smartphone and developing software and applications to encourage entrepreneurs to go online, to develop things like websites, which a lot of young entrepreneurs don't necessarily are concerned with. It's more Facebook and social media. So then also taking into account how do we incorporate the concepts of social media marketing and sales on social media platforms and the benefits to entrepreneurs. So guiding them along the way in terms of all of those concepts and not just the traditional concepts and definitions of what it means to be an entrepreneur, especially as the way things progress is happening at an alarmingly fast rate each day. It's getting, you know, the rate in which we're progressing is getting faster and faster. So we need to constantly adapt to that. And as a member of the board on the NYD, I think already being privy to that ever-changing, constant need to adapt, being in the industry that I'm in and the role that I'm in, bringing that perspective, but also the perspective of being an unemployed youth, trying to manage my own organization from all aspects of governance, from financial to operations to the base, you know, the nitty-gritty of going out and training, so being the trainer and then also looking at the budget. So all of those things, we need to encourage young entrepreneurs to, and again, I'm going to go back to the word holistic, to look at their role as an individual on a whole and how they can develop those skills so that their businesses are successful. Thank you.
Missing, I was going through your CV and I saw that you went to two institutions, New York University and there's another qualification from New Delhi, which is India. I just want to check, was it long distance or did you go to those countries to study?
I went to those countries. I went to those countries.
Okay, yeah. Now, then what I want to establish is, what are the learnings in those countries because they've got a, you know, quite a diversity in terms of errors, and there are similarities more or less between those countries and us. Yeah, the issues of race, ethnicity, class disparities, and you go to America, and the same thing. There's no caste system in America, but you know the class contradictions, the differences in terms of the poorest and the very rich at the top, and the issue of race. What have you learned in terms of what will help us in South Africa from those countries? I know that there are certain things that you don't. There are certain experiences that we don't need in this country. And there are other experiences that we need. So I just want to know, what were the positives, what do you think is applicable here in terms of the, you know, youth development and giving jobs to young people? Then closing the gaps also between rural and urban. Again, it's issues of accountability, you know, both financial and program accountability also. So I just want to talk to those.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you so much for the question. I think when it comes to race and class, the discussion around that, it's quite interesting because I lived in India for 4.5 years. And while I was there, I lived in North India. And I am darker skinned. So the concept of race and identity was very much in the forefront of my mind during my, you know, the ages of 14 to 18 in terms of who am I? I'm South African. I would introduce myself as South African. But by looking at me, you know, a couple of people were, you know, inquisitive. It's like, okay, well, you don't look like the traditional sense of what a South African should look like, just in terms of their perception of what, you know, who we are as South Africans. And I went to international school. So, again, diversity. Even there, when it comes to the concept of class and poverty, there wasn't, it was quite an established privileged school, from privileged towns, myself included. So with regards to that, it's very difficult for me to say, you know, they were kids from this class or this background, because we were all from similar international backgrounds. When I went to New York, it was a bit different in terms of, again, with the racial, you know, the discussion of race. Again, I'm South African. What does that mean? You know, my surname's Singh. So trying to figure all of that out. And again, identity politics, and what does that mean for me as an individual? But what I think we as South Africans, you know, because right now in America with Black Lives Matter and the conversations that are taking place, it's taken them 400 years to get there. And it's a good thing that the conversation is taking place because of how much oppression people of color have been experiencing in America. And I think when it comes to South Africa, we have been having those conversations, and we're lucky because, I think we're lucky because we're a young country. So in terms of progress and development, we have so many opportunities here for us to grow. And we are doing it at a rate that I think should be commended, more so than looked at as us not developing as quickly as we should be. So in terms of my perspective of bringing it here, my experiences abroad were privileged just based on the people that my peers and my colleagues in university and then when I was working. But it was also international background. So my experience was of needing visas and being afraid if you don't get the paperwork on time, if your visa is not going to be renewed. I know a lot of international students right now in America are battling with that with COVID. I know the American government is trying to, if you're doing online classes only, you have to go back to your country of origin. So those were the issues that were pertinent and prevalent to me at that time. Then coming to South Africa and bringing those perspectives, the one thing that, you know, abroad is very prevalent is unpaid internships. It's almost as if it is a given that university students will engage in unpaid internships. It's encouraged. You're almost groomed to, you know, create your CV and get that experience in high school and your first 2 years of university so that you can have that unpaid internship. Now, bringing that to South Africa, I don't believe that our population has the luxury of unpaid internships just from the background of needing provisions and resources to provide for our families. The family structure in South Africa is a lot different than that of the families abroad, just based on how families historically were in South Africa and you know, now with regards to access to opportunities in suburban and CBD areas. So in terms of what I would bring to the NYDA board, I think that perspective is important and conversation. But also what I view as a privilege for me and as an advantage for me is that my perspective of being South African is quite different to other South Africans who look like me. So a lot of other South African Indians, I think my experiences are quite different in terms of having to balance, not necessarily balance, but figure out who I am fundamentally as a person and what my identity is. And having to confront that question as an individual, it's difficult and it's a long journey, but I think it does make you a lot more open to diverse perspectives at the end of the day and understanding where other people are coming from and their backgrounds and also how historical and generational journeys bring an individual to the point that they are at and being empathetic to that so that you can find what is the pipeline for each individual certain background. How do we combat and change the narrative or change the journeys of certain people and of youth for so that they don't, you know, I'm born here, I'm of this, you know, class, this race, this gender, therefore it is inevitable that I end up at this place. So trying to disrupt that, I think, is an understanding that we need to disrupt that thinking and also that journey is fundamental for how we're going to change what is currently happening right now with regards to the youth development, education, and unemployment. Thank you.
There was another question for financial accountability.
Oh, you
haven't answered the question.
Program.
I think, you know, when it comes to finances, fundamentally, each person should have some form of financial literacy. I was lucky enough to gain that as a through managing my organization, Census Training. So with that, I think transparency, being able to fit, like on a fundamental level, being able to read and understand financial documents, understanding what the numbers mean, what's being allocated, monitoring and evaluating those documents. And then also, you know, I like to take a project management approach to a lot of programs and initiatives that I'm involved with, which means, you know, you've got your scope of work, to understanding your objective and your purpose. You're implementing your objectives to get your deliverables. And then through that, through the implementation process, you're also monitoring and evaluating. So I think that's important. And being transparent and having those conversations when things don't make sense or things are not adding up, asking those questions. So, and I'll be frank, I did not learn that overseas. I learned that here. that was not something that at the forefront of a lot of my peers and colleagues' minds abroad, because the idea of being an entrepreneur is not as easily attainable as it is to South Africans for a lot of my colleagues. Whether I'm not sure if it's because of the international background of being, you know, having a visa and having a non-US passport and being in America and what that means, or whether it's just from the lack of exposure to entrepreneurial opportunities for people my age or the people that I was in university with. Thank you. I think fundamentally from my side, the one question that I wanted to know was, for members of the board, what would be your opinion or your perspective, your experience? What has shown you that is the most effective way for the board to implement and duties and functions to ensure a high-performing agency? Thank you. Oh, sorry. With your experience of the NYDA and given NYDA and board members, what are the ways that board members could perform their duties and functions to ensure that that they implement programs and initiatives in a way that the objectives of the agency are being met?
Unfortunately, the question that you are asking, we can't respond to it now because we're still busy with the interviews.
Okay.
We want candidates to tell us.
Okay. Understood.
Yeah. But thank you very much.
Suffice to say, our intention is to make a candidate who will be able to take us from where we are to the next level. And it's a constitution. It's the financial management systems that are used by all, you know, either government, the PFMP,
we want candidates to come and tell us, because we will be tempted. When we respond to you, other candidates who are coming, they'll be telling us what we said. So they must tell us.
Yeah.
Not the best taste. Yeah, next week, ne? All us Yeah, thank you very much. Wish you good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you, honorable members, for giving me this opportunity.
Okay, thank you.